It was true. If you got your Bibles, open them up to Revelation chapter 15. Revelation chapter 15 is an interesting place. And it's really not very long in relation to some of the other chapters in Revelation. It's just 8 verses long. But I want us to look at it a little bit tonight. And here's what I was thinking. Me being a preacher, I guess, and my preacher growing up being a guy of alliteration, a lot of times you'll notice that for me, that I either start something with the same letter or it kind of has the same rhythm to it as I make my outlines and think about it. And so tonight, here's what I was thinking. We're going to look at the setting. The setting is verses 1 and 2. And then in verse 3 and 4, we're going to look at the song. And then in verse 5 through 8, we're going to look at the smoke. The song, or the setting, the song, and the smoke. All of those are important as we prepare for Revelation 16, which is the bowls of wrath, the bowls of judgment. One of the things that we'll get to look at next week, you'll want to see each one of those, and you'll be in for a treat next week as Billy gets to lead that study. And so I encourage you to be here next Wednesday night. And that way you don't miss out on those bowls of wrath. We really have been leading up to them for about 4 or 5, 6 weeks now. We've been kind of laying the groundwork in Revelation for those bowls of wrath. And so we'll get to look at those next week. But we'll lay the last bit of the foundation tonight. It says in verse 15, or chapter 15, verses 1 and 2, the setting. It says, "Then I saw another great and awe-inspiring sign in heaven. 7 angels with the 7 last plagues, for with them God's wrath will be completed. I also saw something like a sea of glass mixed with fire, and those who had won the victory from the beast, his image, and the number of his name were standing on the sea of glass with harps from God." It's interesting when we look at the setting here of what's fixing to happen is the setting is taking place in heaven. That's where we're at. That's where we're at in heaven, and you get to see some things that are happening there. He says, a great and awe-inspiring sign. Now, I don't know about you, but some of the things that we've looked at so far in Revelation, I'm a little fascinated that John would say at this point anything is great and awe-inspiring. You know, the fact is, if you could eat steak and lobster every night for dinner, I would think after 2 or 3 weeks of that, you'd think, man, this is really not that special anymore. You'd probably want something else. But John has just seen spectacular after spectacular after spectacular after spectacular. And then he opens up by saying, listen to this. I saw something that's great and awe-inspiring. I think it's fascinating, but I think it also tells us this. And sometimes we have a tendency to read through the Bible and we just read right over things. I want you to catch this. No matter how many things he has seen, great things God has done, he's still awe-inspired by the things he sees God do. Is that not true for us? Now, I'd say, hey, you probably don't want to eat steak and lobster every night. You probably don't want to have ice cream every night, because the more you do it, you would. Yeah, she says, yeah, I would. Yeah, I'd go with ice cream every night. Okay? But for us, if you do, the more you get to do those things, the less special they become to you. All right? It's just naturally that way. Except when you see God move. But you got to be careful. Because even at a church like First Baptist Church Medill, where we get to see people baptized regularly, and make no mistake about it, you've heard me say it 100 times. You'll probably hear me say it 100 more times. There's a lot of good things that we do at First Baptist Church, but make no mistake about it. The main thing is to keep the main thing, the main thing. And that is to share the gospel and the hope of Jesus Christ with grace and forgiveness for eternal life with a lost and dying world. That's why we exist. Now, Six Flags is fun, and revival's fun, and picnics are fun, and Falls Creek is fun, and worship on Sunday is fun, and Wednesday night is fun, but we exist to help people come to know Christ. And if you're not careful, we can all get to a place where we kind of get to take for granted seeing God's hand in something. Even when He answers our prayers, even when we see people baptized, do you realize that it's not unusual for us to baptize as many people on one Sunday as other churches would see in an entire year. It's not that unusual for us to baptize three or four on any given Sunday. And there are some churches that won't baptize four this year. But if we're not careful, we get to thinking that baptism is how you start a church service and that everybody does it that way. No, everybody don't do it that way, and that's not designed so that we know how to start our church service. It's to celebrate that somebody has come to know Christ. Okay? And so I think it's interesting that John starts out here after all he's seen, and he says another great and awe-inspiring sign. He says that he gets to see this, and then in the end of verse 1 it says that God's wrath will be completed. I think it's encouraging on one side to know that God's wrath will be completed, that he will have accomplished what he set out to accomplish. But I also think there's something important about God's wrath being poured out. But I also think there's something important about God's wrath being completed and that it's over, because it's going to be bad. When we think of the extent of God's grace and God's mercy and God's love, you got to know that exponentially proportional has to be God's wrath. And I think that's significant to us that John says, hey, God's wrath will be completed. It will be done, but it'll also be nice when it's over. And I think that's significant. He says the sea of glass that's mixed with fire. When you think of a sea of glass, now for me, you've heard me tell you before that one of the things that's been a great joy for me the last 7 or 8 years that I absolutely love is getting to scuba dive. But in the last about 3 or 4 years, I'll tell you something else that I've gotten to where I love just almost as much as scuba diving, and that is water skiing. But now I'm going to tell you something. There's a difference in water skiing when the waves are kind of like this and when the waves are kind of like this floor. You ever get out on the lake when it's like glass? It's fun to ride in a boat when it's like glass, but not like it is when you're water skiing. Man, if you can get there early in the morning or late in the evening when the water just, all at once, the water will just kind of lay down. Oh, and if you can find the right little cove and the right little place. And it says that this is a sea of glass. I think it brings along the idea that God's in control, and that things, there's a peace and a tranquility. The only problem is it says it's a sea of glass with what? Fire. With fire. What does that tell you? It tells you that God is in control, but things are fixing to not be peaceful. The bottom line in all the scriptures, fire is a sign of what? Either cleansing or judgment, right? Now, in Revelation, what is fire a sign of, at least in Revelation chapter 15? It's a sign of cleansing by judgment, right? Everybody with me? Does that make sense to you? I think that's significant, and I think that's the picture that John's trying to paint for us. He says, for those who had won, also I also saw something like a sea of glass mixed with fire, and those who had won the victory from the beast, his image, and the number of his name were standing on the sea of glass with harps from God. I think it's interesting that he says, those who had won the victory, who are those? Who are those? It's the people who have won the victory that are the martyrs that we read about back in Revelation chapter 12, 13, 14. That they were the victors. They were granted victory because they stayed faithful. It says, how did they stay faithful? It says that they did not, they had won the victory from the beast and from his image. Okay? When we think about that image, what is the image? That was the mark, right? And then it says, and the number on his name. That was what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the 666, right? It says that they had avoided that. They had won the victory. How did they win the victory? They did not choose Satan's side. They did not worship the Satan or the Antichrist, or they didn't take on the mark of the beast. Some of them would have been punished. Some of them would have been imprisoned. And some of them would have been martyred. They died. Does that sound like descriptions for victorious to you? Punished, imprisoned, and death. None of us would describe victory that way. But in this particular instance, it is victory. Why? Because they were faithful to God to the end. And because they were faithful to God to the end, number one, not only will they avoid judgment, but that they will receive blessing. Okay? And don't lose sight of the fact that avoiding judgment and receiving blessing are not the same thing. Those are two totally different entities. Those are two totally different actions and events, right? Sometimes we kind of just read it right through and we just think, well, they've avoided judgment and they've been blessed. Let me ask you a question. Would you rather avoid judgment or be blessed? Most of us would say yes. Right? Because we understand that that's two totally different things. I would like to avoid judgment, but I would also like to be blessed. And I think that's significant when we get to see it with them. It says that they're standing on the lake, which I think is interesting because as it says that they were standing on the sea of glass with harps from God. What do we know about standing on the sea? It doesn't work that way. Physics says that doesn't happen, right? But yet we know Jesus did. I think it's interesting here that it says that they do. And then it says that they're playing harps. When you think of harps, what do you think of? I just think of peace and tranquility again. They're on a sea of glass, but they're playing harps. That's like maybe peace and tranquility squared, right? Exponential. But it's interesting that these are people who have avoided the mark. But we all know from what we talked about a couple weeks ago, for those people who are Christ followers, that are God followers, and they don't take the mark and they don't follow the Antichrist, what is their life going to be like? Gary says victorious. It is victorious eventually. But in the present, it's going to be difficult. Hey, they're going to be hunted. It's going to be tough. They can't buy food. They can't provide food. They can't take care of themselves. It's interesting for us to know that these people had to not only have faith that Jesus is the Messiah, but they really had to have faith that God would provide for them and sustain them because they were not able. What did it tell us? If you didn't have the mark, you couldn't barter and you couldn't exchange things financially. How are they going to get food? How are they going to take care of their loved ones? You talk about a faith that God would provide and God would sustain. Look at verses 3 and 4. It says, they sang the song of God's servant Moses and the song of the Lamb. Great and awe-inspiring are your works, Lord God the Almighty. Righteous and true are your ways, King of the nations. Lord, who will not fear and glorify your name? Because you alone are holy, because all the nations will come and worship before you, because your righteous acts have been revealed. Now, I thought about singing that for you. But that just doesn't sound like our kind of songs. It doesn't seem to have a typical measure to it, and it certainly doesn't rhyme at the end of the lines like it's supposed to. When you think about this idea of the song, when do you remember there being another song of praise in the Scriptures? Do you remember a time? Do what? In David had songs of praise, certainly. What do you say? Moses had a song of praise. Mary had a song of praise. You should go back and look at some of these songs of praise in the Scriptures. Now, the one that this one relates closest to is back to the song of Moses in the book of Exodus. When the people of Israel leave Egypt and Pharaoh's army takes out after them, and then when they cross the water and the sea just gobbles them up, and God lets his people go through on dry ground and delivers them from Pharaoh's army, then Moses and the people sing a song on the other side of God's deliverance. Now stop and think about this here. It's a different setting, but it's really the same situation. God has just saved them. They've just attained victory. Just like the people when they left out of Israel. I think it's interesting. If you look back, these same martyrs, do you remember a couple of weeks ago when we talked about the song that they would sing as martyrs? And the Bible said in Revelation 14, it says that this is a song that only they could sing. Do you remember that? We talked about it that night. That it said, it didn't say they were the only ones that can sing it. It says they were the only ones who could learn it. That was true of that song. But this song can be learned by all of us. Look at it again. Great and awe-inspiring are your works, Lord God, the Almighty. Can you think of a place where God is awe-inspiring and has done great works in your life? I know most of us would shake our head, but I don't really ask you that so that you can go, yes. I ask you that so that you think of what that is. Where? I'm not talking in general, I'm talking specific. Where have you seen God do great and awe-inspiring things in your life? If we're not careful, we've been Christians so long we forget that the first great awe-inspiring thing God did to any of us was save us. And if you're not careful, you can be a Christian so long that you forget how great and awe-inspiring that is. That God chose you. Look at the second part. Righteous and true are your ways. Do you think of God as righteous and true? Sure we do. What about specifically in your life? Where do you see Him as righteous and true? King of the nations. Lord, who will not fear and glorify your name? Because you alone are holy, because all the nations will come and worship before you, because your righteous acts have been revealed. How do those things relate to you? Remember, it said the song of the martyrs back in Revelation chapter 14. Nobody else could learn that song. They couldn't sing it. But that's not true of Moses' song, and that's not true of this song right here. We can all sing this song, but we got to understand, why is it that we sing the song? It's not because we think these things of God. It's because we've experienced these things of God. And if we're not growing in our faith, what was once special becomes not so special. Time lets the significance wear off. Right? It's that way for all of us. You remember when you get a new car and you wash it once a week and you don't let anybody eat or drink in it? And then after about 4 or 5 months, you hadn't washed it in 2 months and everybody eats and drinks and Alicia, you just throw your cups in the back seat. Right? When you get it and you get those cups, you find a trash can and throw them in it. But after you've had it a little while, you just chunk them over in the back. Right? The new wears off. And if we're not careful, if we're not constantly growing in our faith, hey, what God did for you 3 years ago is not good for today. Not if you're going to sing songs of praise. If you're going to give testimony, it is, because you can still testify to what God has done for you, right? But great works of 3 years ago don't usually correlate to songs of praise. So for us, constantly be thinking of where God has done great, awe-inspiring things for us. I want you to catch one more thing in this song of praise right here that's interesting. Read back through it on your own, and as you read, just put up a finger how many times the people who are singing mention themselves or something great they have done. Anybody? Look back through there one more time and see. Now, these people were martyred for their faith. imprisoned and punished. Look back through that one more time and just put up a finger when you see a complaint that they register. Miss Phyllis is looking at me, just shaking her head like, it's not there. You know, the other advantage to counting the places where God blesses you is you'll forget about some of the places where you think things aren't going so well. Because the truth of the matter is, most of us focus on the negatives, but the truth is there's way more positives in our life than there are negatives. But if we're not careful, we can have three negatives that just totally derail us. Sometimes it's just one negative, and it'll derail us for an hour or a day or two or three days. It's interesting, in their song of praise, they did not mention themselves one time. They did not mention anything they had done good one time, and they did not register any complaints, even though they had been martyred for your faith. You think at some point one of them would have went, hey, God, what's up with this? They didn't have to endure it. Why did I have to endure it? But they didn't, did they? They were just grateful for the great things God had done for them. I think that's significant in the idea that we look at. Look at verses 5 through 8. It says, after this I looked, and the heavenly sanctuary, the tabernacle of the testimony, was opened. Out of the sanctuary came the seven angels with the seven plagues, dressed in clean, bright linen with gold sashes wrapped around their chests. One of the four living creatures gave the seven angels seven gold bowls filled with the wrath of God who lives forever and ever. And then the sanctuary was filled with smoke from God's glory and from his power, and no one could enter the sanctuary until the seven plagues of the seven angels were completed. It's interesting when we think about the smoke, the things that happened in these set of verses. The smoke is really a kicker, but I want us to look at something. It says the dress that they had, they were dressed in white fine linen with a gold sash around their waist. You don't have to look back in the Old Testament. You can trust me on it, but if you want to look it up, it'll confirm it. Do you remember how the high priest was dressed? Fine white linen with a gold sash. In God's Old Testament theology, the high priest was really the main guy. And now it says that they're dressed that way. It says one of the four living creatures. Do you remember when we looked at the four living creatures back in Revelation chapter 4? Do you remember what they were? There was a lion. There was an ox, there was a man, and there was an eagle. The four living creatures, it says, were here when this happened. Then it talks about smoke from God's glory. By the way, how do you make smoke? Now, if we think smoke, we would think fire. But if you think as far as some of the translations will say clouds, it still takes heat, whether it's fog or clouds, and it takes water. I think it's interesting, all of the things that happen, but it says that there's a smoke. The reason I think the smoke is significant, maybe not so much how it's made, as much as it is that I think there's a, just in reading and studying it, it said that one of the things that was significant is that there was a holiness to God that when he filled the place, how well can you see through smoke? Not very, huh? Do you remember when Moses went up on the mountain, what God did on the bottom of the mountain? He put clouds so that they couldn't see, right? And what did he tell them about the mountain? Told them, don't touch it. Don't go up on the mountain. If you touch the mountain, you're going to die, right? Even though God desires for us to know him, there are certainly things in our lives that are just still a little bit cloudy that we just don't understand about God. He says his ways are higher than our ways and his thoughts are greater than our thoughts. Now, I don't know that theologically that holds in the book of Revelation where we're talking about it, but I do think there's something significant to us that you just got to trust. You know the old song that says, when you can't see his hand, you trust his heart. I don't know for which one of you that needs to hear that tonight, and I don't know what you're going through in life, but I'm going to tell you this, you can trust God's heart, even when it's maybe a little smoky and you can't see His hand. It's interesting when we look at other places where smoke filled the tabernacle. When Moses completed the tabernacle, it says that God filled the place. Smoke. When Solomon dedicated his temple in 2 Chronicles, God filled the place. Do you remember Isaiah's great speech that he gave about, Lord, I'm a man of unclean lips? Do you remember that speech in Isaiah where God appears to Isaiah and speaks to Isaiah? If you read, matter of fact, I want to read it to you real fast. I think you'll find this interesting. It's in Isaiah chapter 6 where that happens. And I want you to catch this. Isaiah chapter 6, and it's verse 5 where Isaiah says that. He says, then I said, this is Isaiah, then I said, woe is me, for I am ruined because I am a man of unclean lips and live among a people of unclean lips, and because my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. That's verse 5. Listen to verse 4. The foundations of the doorway shook at the sounds of their voices, and the temple was filled with smoke. Even though you can't see through smoke, you can trust. And when God shows up with smoke, great things happen, and great men and great women of God are called out and singled out and equipped to do a great work. I don't know that anything better could happen this Sunday than that God fill this place with smoke. That'd be the greatest thing that could happen. And I think when that happens, we wouldn't have to preach and we wouldn't have to sing. And then it says, no one could enter until God's wrath was completed. I'll quit with this. When we look at the seals, how many are there? 7. When we look at the trumpets, how many are there? 7. When we look at the bowls of wrath, how many are there? 7. What do we know about the number 7? It's the number of perfection. It's the number of completion, right? The other thing is, I've told you before, they don't have an exclamation point in the Greek language or the Hebrew. So the way they emphasized something was to do what? Say it 3 times, right? Here's what I want you to catch. 7, 7, 7. All judgments. I also think it's interesting that these 7s would counteract 3 6s. Maybe it's just a coincidence, but I don't really believe in those. I'm telling you, God has designed everything down to the minute details. But I do want you to catch this. Judgment, judgment, judgment. Who is it that instigates them? The Lord does. In each one of those places, it says that the Lord said, the Lord directed, the Lord guided, or they just come out of heaven so that you know they've come out of the throne room. Vengeance, what does it say? Is mine, saith the Lord. It's His job to judge. What's our job? Love. Our job is love. Our job is love, and our job is go tell. His job is to judge. Don't miss out on next week as you get to look at the 7 bowls of wrath. They're pretty devastating. but they're pretty interesting in the things that happen. Let me pray for you.